One of the questions that John Stay on Patmos throws up for us is whether the sovereignty of God is just a head doctrine or whether it's the sure foundation for our times. The unexpected challenges of Patmos experiences test whether we trust him with the big things of life and the little ones. It's interesting that neither John on Patmos nor Paul during his times of imprisonment ever described themselves as being prisoners of the Roman Empire. They saw themselves first and last as being in the Lord's hands. And God found ways to make the rocky island of Patmos come alive when he appeared in glory to his beloved disciple John. We can't be naive and draw wrong assumptions about the sovereignty of God. He wills many things for our lives, not least that we experience abundant life in Jesus. But our own responses determine the extent to which we live in the good of this. There's nothing passive about the doctrine of the sovereignty of God. If there were, then people would, and unfortunately do, end up believing and accepting things that actually need to be resisted and overcome, because they come from the one who came to kill and destroy, the one who is a thief and a robber. In a very real sense, God limits his power over his children, and he gives us freedom to choose. God allowed many of his children to go into exile or worse, and John, like many other believers, chose not to say, "Caesar is Lord," but to remain faithful to Jesus and to accept the consequences. May we likewise make good choices. God knows how to find us when we're in a Patmos experience. Do you remember how Jesus saw the disciples on the Lake of Galilee straining at the oars in the moonlight? The word in Greek literally means to be tortured. It's a very strong word, but Jesus makes as if to pass his disciples by. Surely he must have been moved by their plight? Or was he testing their faith as he did when he asked Philip how he was going to provide for the 5,000? Or was he himself simply wanting to spend more time alone with his Father? Either way, he answered their cry and came alongside them saying, "Take courage. I'm here." And the disciples pricked up their ears and in one person's case at least had the courage to step out of the boat, and in doing so came to a deeper realization of who Jesus really was. You see, Jesus was echoing the words of Exodus 3:14, where Yahweh reveals himself in the words, "I am who I am." And the significance of those words did not escape Peter's attention when he'd had time to process the implications. It was just after this episode that he first recognized Jesus as the long-awaited Messiah. So perhaps the real miracle of this episode was not that Peter managed to take a few steps on the water, or that the winds died down the moment Jesus got into the boat with them, but rather that the eyes of the disciples were opened to see who he really was. And that's also what Patmos times are all about, turning head knowledge into heart understanding and the vigorous deployment of our faith. Yes, there are floods and fires to pass through, and even loss and desolation in the valleys of Baca which we drench with our tears. But these aren't our final destination. We're passing through these vales of tears. Feelings and circumstances go up and down, but the word of the Lord stands firm forever. God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love that you show him as you help his people and continue to do so. So may we show this diligence to the very end, so that what we hope for may be fully realized as we imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised. This is the attitude that will keep us from exuding an odour of staleness as we pass through Patmos times, and even of grudgingness as a result of the hurts and disappointments that we've sustained. May we remember to look up to Jesus when strong temptations come, so that we don't lash out or give up, but say, "Your perseverance, Lord. your love and forgiveness here, Lord. Or whatever it is that we're most in need of at that particular moment. In the midst of all our challenges and troubles, he's still a very present help. And that will keep us from that sense of striving and indispensability that characterizes certain types of rather self-righteous believers. Anything is better than spoiling the sweetness of his presence. May we continue to exude the fragrance of Mary of Bethany, because it revitalizes others, rather than indulging the veiled resentment of Martha as we go about our daily business. The people around us may be carrying far more sorrow than they show on their faces, and be far more in need of his love than we realize. I love it when the Lord tells me in so many words on a given day who to visit, what to pray, what to do. This isn't servile, childish dependency. It's the fruit of union with him. But the Lord is equally sovereign in Patmos times, when we can't hear him speak and simply need to commit our way to him and step out and make things happen, trusting him to sustain us and to intervene as we go along. I remember years ago when we lived near Church Stretton, I set off early one morning for a ministry trip to Holland. And that particular railway station has no ticket office. But on the first leg of my journey to the airport, the conductor never turned up. So I went to the office at Crewe to buy a ticket from Church Stretton to Liverpool, put my hand in my pocket to pull out my wallet, and discovered with a sinking feeling that I was wearing the wrong pair of trousers. My pockets were £10 note-free zones, and the plane was due to fly in little more than 2 hours. I muttered an explanation to the ticket office, and a man in the queue next to mine overheard me and said, "Here's my credit card. Use it to go anywhere you want." Thank you, Lord. It wasn't an angel, or if it was, he had an address that I was able to send the money to later. But it definitely felt like a divine appointment. Something rather similar happened when I was on my way to Finland. When my train had been delayed and Heathrow had been struck by such savage storms that there was a huge backlog of passengers. I could see that the queue ahead was going to take hours to get through, and I only had 40 minutes to get through to catch my flight. There was no chance of doing so, but the Lord suddenly said to me quite clearly, "I want you to be in Finland." Moments later, a woman in British Airways uniform headed towards the huge throng of people, singled me out, and led me to a separate ticket post which she opened for me. And the moment she'd checked my documents, she closed it again. And I really do wonder if that one wasn't an angel in disguise. From simple episodes like these, we can derive great encouragement. When God has a purpose in mind, he's prepared to go to enormous lengths to bring it about. And even though John's stay on the bleak and bare island of Patmos may have looked very lacking in either purpose or fruit initially, in God's sight it was golden. And as the Lord instructed the Laodicean church, "Buy gold from me, refined in the fire." These trials, Peter reminds us, have come so that your faith, which is of greater worth than gold, may be proved genuine and may result in praise and glory and honour when Jesus Christ is revealed. These Patmos times are not so far removed from what's often known as the dark night of the soul, when the ability to sense the Lord's presence sharply decreases, and with it, opportunities for outward service. If the Lord doesn't immediately open up some new sphere, it may be because he's changing the season that we're in, or wanting to draw our attention to something completely different. Sooner or later, the Lord will find ways to bring these new things to our attention, faster than we can get our warp shields up to dodge them. The discipline we read of in Hebrews 12 is a crucial part of our relationship with him, and it's a handcrafted affair. Whenever the Lord highlights a matter, we have a choice. And the quicker we face it, the easier it is for the Lord to lead us on. But if we insist on covering up and pretending it isn't there, we're more or less sentencing ourselves to live with more of the same. If we've got something wrong, we can't afford to let pride or stubbornness cause us to hold back from backtracking to the place where we first went wrong. Anything's better than straying further down the long road to nowhere. There's a fine line between adopting a profoundly unbiblical que sera, sera attitude, it's almost a Buddhist-like fatalism, and a deeper acceptance of the way the Lord is leading us. But that is the fruit of relationship and union, not a cop-out or an opt-out. So the sovereignty of God is a profoundly reassuring theme. But it's about so much more than God just delivering us from our problems, for that certainly comes into it. It's about going deeper with Himself. May I encourage you to spend some time now letting the Lord bring to mind at least 5 episodes in your life. Let Him interpret to you where He was in them. How did you respond? Did they work out well because you picked up on signs of His leading? Or less well because you missed them? What can you learn from what happened when what you had most hoped for did not come about? Spend time in the Lord's presence talking with Him now about these things. He'll meet with you.